right. Welcome in to a Thursday edition of the Sports Huddle on SEMO ESPN Radio. 1220 AM, 93.5 FM, and online at SEMOESPN.com. Eric Sean and the Missouri Sports Hall of Famer, Jess Bolin, inviting you to join us right here in the huddle. Here's our huddle hotline number powered by EBOMD. It is 573-334-1220. 573-334-1220. The EBOMD huddle hotline. Jess Bolin in the house. How are things? How long you been up?
Couldn't be better. How late is, what time did I get up? 5 o'clock.
5 a.m.
Yeah.
All right. So you've been kicking around for a little while.
I should be awake and alert.
Got some caffeine in you. You probably have breakfast in you.
I'm drinking a Sprite.
If you've been up 3 hours, I'm guessing you've taken 2 showers. I know how many showers you take.
No, I'm actually going on one at the moment, but I do. It'll probably average more than twice a day, because I take one in the morning and get up, and then, you know, before I go to bed, I can't go to bed dirty, you know?
Yeah.
Bound to be bacteria on me somewhere.
Yeah.
So I'll take another one. Yeah. So it's at least 2 a day, and it's just... It is what it is.
So I get in the shower about, I'm going to say this morning, 3:40, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Got to be out the door by 4:10 at the latest. That's just my own deadline. And for whatever reason, all of the sudden, in the shower, and then it just starts getting hot. Now, I am light-complected. As you can see, my face is all sunburned. I had to sit outside at Tennessee Tech all weekend.
Well, I am, too. Blondes and redheads are... Redhead's worse than blonde.
My forehead is peeling. My nose is peeling. You know, putting moisturizer on. And it gets hot. And I'm like, what is going on? So I turn the cold water up just a little bit. Okay? Perfect. Now, all of a sudden, after 2 or 3 minutes, then it starts getting too cold. I had to adjust it like 3 times this morning. I never have to do that. And no, Don Sean was sleeping. Nobody was flushing toilets. You are a former plumbing engineer.
Master plumber. Why? That's high as you can go in Cape.
All right. Why does that happen?
Well, the one good reason I would probably say that the variation in temperatures without moving the handle.
Nobody touches anything. Cats are the only living beings moving around in the house.
Your water heater has a fill pipe, what they call a fill pipe. The cold water going in your water heater, a lot of people don't know this, but there's a pipe on the inside of the water heater that goes all the way down within 6 inches of the bottom of the water heater. So when you're getting cold water, the cold water actually goes into the water heater 6 inches from the bottom. And the reason for that is that it pushes all the hot water up as it fills. So you can get naturally cold water if you want it, but if you turn it as a mix, then you'll get the hot water pushed up by the cold water fill tube. A lot of times that tube breaks off, and it goes down, just falls down the water heater. So now you're filling the water heater from the top of the water heater. So you get hot. If you go all hot, you'll get a lot of hot. Or if you go, you know, mix it and you get a good temperature that you want, it'll vary because it'll be pushing up hot and cold, you know, it has no control over it. So your hot's going to usually go down to cold.
So what you're saying is my hot water heater's on the blink.
Well, it could be lots of things, but that'd be the first thing I'd look at.
Did you hear the faux pas that I just threw out there?
Is on the blink?
No, I said my hot water heater. Yeah, it's a water heater. It's not heating the hot water.
Well,
it's a water heater, not a hot water heater.
It's not a wrong terminology. I mean, it is for hot water. That's what it's there for. So you could call it a hot water heater, yeah.
All right.
It's been called lots of things when they don't work. I'm not saying that's the answer to your problem, but I'd be probably the first thing I'd go to.
That bastage of a water
and
heater.
See, you, when that happens, you don't have a lot of hot water. You know what? You may be able to take a shower, and not a long one, but get by. But now if somebody else stepped in there, say that your wife steps in and takes a shower right after you do, well, then she's not going to get much hot water because it's going to mix. No, we're just going to push the cold out in a smaller circle.
I can't have a super hot shower. Don Sean loves a hot shower. Mine has to be warm. I do not, my skin does not react well to anything other than warm water.
You probably like one around 95 to 100 degree temperature.
No idea.
I like a warm shower. I like it. I don't like it hot, but I like it warm enough that's
If my shower is steaming up my bathroom mirror, it's too hot.
Well, mine does.
I can't have it that
mine
hot.
Mine does steam up the mirror, yes. And I take a jacuzzi maybe a couple times a week, and I take that pretty hot.
I'm always wiping my bathroom mirror off. Anyway, we had our downstairs bathroom in our finished basement completely remodeled. It doesn't even look like the same room. So it's awesome. But I'm wiping that mirror down because, I don't know about you, I am a violent teeth brusher.
I am too.
I am violent, and I get little pieces of white toothpaste that fly onto the mirror. So I'm always having
to clean
that baby off.
You know.
I can't softly brush my teeth. It's violent.
No, me too. I want to get that stuff out of there. Now, you know, the dentist will tell you the proper way to brush your teeth is up and down,
yeah,
not sideways, because your teeth, the crack between your teeth is up and down. So I always brush my teeth up and down, and if I really want to scrub them, especially the front ones, I'll go sideways and up and down and everything else, and I also got a water pick. And
so you pay attention to the crack. I mean, let's face it, plumbers, cracks... You know, that's a softball right down the middle.
I do a lot more things in my life than plumbing.
I'll just back out of the batter's box that one.
Plumbing was just maybe, I don't know. I did so many other things, you know, isometric drawings and all that kind of stuff, you know. So actually, when you think of a plumber, you think of a toilet stool. Really. I tell you what.
Well, this show has gone right into the toilet stool.
99% of my work was not that. 99% of my work was piping and, you know, stuff like that. Big buildings.
You did all the plumbing. We built our house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I worked on the KFS building.
Right next door.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know we have a tunnel? It's like a storm tunnel type thing. There's a tunnel that goes underneath our parking lot, right over to the KFES 12 building. Now we keep it locked, and they store things in there.
The tornado.
But way back.
Tornado safety place.
Yeah, way back in the day, there was a tunnel between these two buildings, us and KFES. Anyway, all right. The Cardinals tunneled their way to a victory yesterday, and it started. Well, I guess it started poorly when the bases were loaded, nobody out, Gibson on the mound. The way the Cardinals have been playing, you just thought, this is probably going to be a 2-3 run inning, right?
Yeah, game over after that inning is kind of the way you thought. And that's the way I thought, because that's the way it's been going.
But they get a sack fly, and that's it, man. Kyle Gibson was good yesterday.
He was. And so was Montgomery. Montgomery was real good for first four or five innings. And if you remember our conversation yesterday, you don't have to roll back the tape very far. Just yesterday, I talked about the necessity for the Cardinals to win that game. And I said, you just simply, no matter who's pitching, I know Montgomery's a good pitcher. There would be a lot of reasons you could lose to him. But I said, it doesn't make any difference. You have to beat whoever's on the mound and say, today, I'm taking this series. I'm winning. Because if you got shut out yesterday, for instance, it just nullified your great come behind from behind victory on Monday. Okay, you had a great come from behind win, a couple homers by Goldschmidt and Gorman to win that game Monday, and then you get stomped on Tuesday, 14-1. Well, you can say, well, we're back in the old doldrums. You know, Goldschmidt struck out three times. Weak score, one run. That was the first inning. Then eight shutout innings. What do you do in game three? Game three, do you come out and score a run or two and get beat against 6-2? Or do you come out and win? And by winning, you can kind of get that in the back of your mind about how bad you've been, how you're slumping. You kind of, you know, it just mentally, I tell you what, I coached a long time, and the mental side of sports is way more than people think. How much times you hear people talk about confidence? The ability to do things you've got. But the confidence level, there's always doubt in your mind. But Goldschmidt bounced back with a couple of hits yesterday. Gorman got an RBI yesterday. So now you can go into this series. I think they're going to the Mets, aren't they?
That's correct.
Mets have been playing good baseball. But you can go into that series now thinking, well, maybe we can go in there and take a couple games. So it's a different, completely different attitude whether you won or lost that game yesterday. The Cardinals are one of five teams, I think, that's still got less than 10 errors this season. So their defense has really been good.
Last in the league in home runs.
They'll be that way for a while.
I'd like to see some power.
Yeah, they will. They'll live with some power. But the two guys we talked about going down went down. We talked about Scott going down. He went down. We knew that. Everybody did. But Jordan Walker... A lot of people wouldn't have thought he'd went down, but you and I both said he would. He'd go down the minors.
I think we pegged,
along with Thompson.
I think we pegged all four guys that got sent down,
Victor Scott. I mentioned Thompson going down. You asked me about his possibility going down, and I said he just earned a ticket. That seven runs he gave up, you knew he was going to go down.
And you and I both flagged all four.
Yeah,
Andre Pallante, Victor Scott, Jordan Walker, Zach Thompson.
And it's not that you're giving up on those kids. It's just that you understand a guy like Jordan Walker cannot be a bench player in the big leagues and come in and bat, pinch hit once in a while. That's not what you want from him. You want him to go down, get his four ABs every game, develop, keep getting better. Don't worry. Jordan Walker will be back. And so will Scott. May take a little longer for Scott. I don't know. But Jordan Walker can hit, and he's proven that everywhere he played, and he'll get his things lined out, and he'll be back. I don't have any doubts. But he'll probably be a much better player when he gets back than he was when he went down.
It's a 155 batting average for Walker. He has one extra base hit, a double. He has no home runs, four RBIs, only 15 total bases in 20 games, 18 strikeouts in 58 innings. Right now... He is just in a funk.
Yeah, and see...
And keep in mind, he was, last year, and you were encouraged, by the way he finished up, third youngest player in Major League Baseball. This is not an isolated incident. It doesn't mean he's done, and it doesn't mean that Jordan Walker somehow is a bust. It just
means that he needs four at-bats every game, and the Cards can't give it to him. It's simple as that. You've got to have guys in there that if the Cardinals were 14-7, sure, you could go along with him. You could have him in the lineup and everything else because other guys are doing the workload and you can let him get his four ABs. But you can't let him get four ABs when they're critical because the team is overall hitting so low. You need somebody in there that at least got a better opportunity, like a Burleson or anybody they got. They brought up Fermin. I think that's a good move. I had mentioned him the other day, if you remember, that he was hitting really well down there. I don't know if he's tapered off. I'm sure he has.
He's hitting 350.
So they brought him up. And you know what I would do? I'd stick him in the lineup. He's an infielder.
Where are you going to put him?
I'd put him at second base Or it just depends on who I think is the best fielder. If I think he's a better fielder than Gorman, I put him at second base. If I think he's Gorman's a better fielder, I would DH for Mean. But a guy hitting 350, don't you got to give him a shot? What are you bringing him up for? Maybe he can play outfield. They certainly use some more offense in the outfield. But those four guys, I imagine all of them will be back up. But I think Thompson, what caused his deterioration is just lack of work. Well, same with Jordan Walker. Walker had more chances than Thompson. But that was a big win for the Cards yesterday. Now they need to go to New York. And if you don't sweep New York, you need to take two out of three and hit pretty decent. Hit, in other words, hit. You're never going to hit a great pitcher. I mean, I don't mean never. I mean, they're going to be better than you most of the time. But be competitive. And the Cards can do that this year. They got starting pitching that can actually keep you in the game, just like Gibson did yesterday.
So
Lynn didn't have a good game the day before, but he competed. You remember how the bases loaded, he got out of that jam, and so he competed with you and kept you from being a blowout and allowed the Cardinals to come back.
Through the age 22 season, Jordan Walker has a 752 OPS. Some players who you will recognize at 752, through their age 22 seasons, for those who are saying, Walker, he's not going to. Would you say Jose Ramirez may be the best third baseman in baseball? He may be the best third baseman in the American League. Through age 22, Jose Ramirez, 644 OPS. And remember, Walker, 752. Ketel Marte, who finished top three in the MVP voting a few years back, 658. Through age 22, Byron Buxton, 672. Nolan Arenado, 706. All lower than Walker. Xander Bogaerts, OPS lower. Bobby Witt Jr., OPS lower. Luis Robert for the White Sox All-Star, lower. It takes a little bit. Yeah. This is the big leagues, man.
And you know,
Jackson Holliday, the number one prospect in the sport, Jess. They brought him up. He's comfortable playing shortstop. They make him play a position that he's not used to, second base. He's hitting 059. Does anybody think Jackson Holliday is going to be a bust?
No.
No.
And you know, you've always got guys like a Juan Soto. Or some people come up that's 20 years old, 21, and they just get it, okay? They're just ahead of the curve. And then when a guy like Jordan Walker comes up that's predicted to be an all-star in the major leagues, you don't compare him to those guys you just mentioned. You don't mention Arenado, what his low points were, and these other guys. You compare him to Cedeno. Or Soto, you know, kids, guys that come up young, that's what you compare them to. Sure, if you compare them to those other guys, it's just a quick trip to the minors, a couple weeks, and he'll be back. And I think he will be back. I don't know if it'll be that quick. But don't worry, he'll be back up in the big leagues this year. I would bet money on that if I had any. Could I borrow some money to make a bet?
So, Enos.
No.
Eno Saris, Jess, he's a pretty popular guy on Twitter because he works for The Athletic and he works for FanGraphs. And they do a lot of breaking down of statistics. I mean, if you go on FanGraphs, it'll be over your head. I'm not just saying you. I'm saying anybody. It's going to be over your head unless you...
Is it mathematics?
Well, just sabermetrics. So
I doubt it'll be over my head. It probably would be yours.
Saris from FanGraphs put this down on social media yesterday. This is the way that the metrics absolutely definitively come out. Pulled baseballs in the air are the best batted ball type by outcome. pulled balls in the air. Here is how the Cardinals ranked in pull percentage on fly balls by season. In 2017, they were 17th. Then they hired Jeff Albert. And they went from 17th to 5th, then 9th. 2020, COVID year, throw that out, they were 19th. In 2021, pulled batted balls in the air under Jeff Albert, they were 1st. 2022, they were 1st in Major League Baseball. Last year, after Albert left, they were 8th. This year, they are 30th. And the St. Louis Cardinals, right now, as we sit here this morning, they have 2 extra base hits against fastballs 95 or higher. 2.
Well,
the lowest by far in Major League Baseball.
You and I both agree that Jeff Albert should have never left. Never. It wasn't his fault on any Cardinals' lack of offense or whatever. I don't know why. It could always be personality. You know, that's in the dugout problems, clubhouse. I wouldn't think so, but why would you let a guy like that go that's got a good history and background?
He left. He was getting destroyed on social media. Everybody was blaming Jeff Albert for anything that did not go right offensively. And so he flat out just said when the Cardinals offered him a contract, like Mike Maddox, thank you, but I will pass.
Albert, where'd he go?
Mets organization. Now, I don't think he's a hitting coach for the Mets, but he went to the Mets.
That's why I say if the Cards don't turn it around, Marmol's toast, and they'll bring in a new hitting coach also. And you think, well, Albert Pujols, there'll be your hitting coach. Well, maybe. Usually superstars don't make good coaches or managers. Simple as that.
He is the director of hitting for the New York Mets.
So he's got something to do with it.
So we'll see him coming up with the Mets. And, oh, by the way, if you haven't been following it, the Mets have won 7 of their last 10 games, and they've climbed 2 games over 500. So all of a sudden, the Mets are playing pretty good baseball, right when the Cardinals come there.
The Cardinals are, historically a pretty decent team on the road. In fact, this year, I would say they probably got as many victories on the road as they got at home. But
Francisco Lindor just hit a couple of home runs yesterday, so he's getting hot. He was really, really ice cold.
I thought he was a superstar when he's in the American League. I really liked him. But he's really dropped a little with the New York Mets.
So the Chicago Cubs are only a half game out of first place. But, Jess, the injuries that the Cubs are dealing with, Cody Bellinger has fractured ribs. He's gone on the injured list. Seiya Suzuki has been out since April 14th, right oblique. Their ace, Justin Steele, out with a hamstring. Drew Smyly out with a right hip. Kyle Hendricks, lower back strain on the IL. But the Cubs are hanging around. Now, they've just called up Pete Crow Armstrong. That's their number one prospect.
Now, Bellinger went on the list just lately.
Right. Went on the list.
I watched the Cubs play probably more than you because they got more opportunity to watch them.
Just went on the injured list. But what I'm saying is the Cubs have a lot of guys that are out. Now, Pete Crow Armstrong, their number one prospect, it'll be interesting. He struggled last year when they brought him up, but he's been doing great in the minor leagues. I'll be interested to see how that goes for the Cubs.
Well, Bush is kind of doing pretty good too, isn't he?
Yes. Had another RBI yesterday.
Cubs got some injuries, so what? Everybody else does.
Right.
Cardinals wiped out with injuries. 2/3 of their starting outfield. Dylan Carlson was no question going to be the Cardinals out center fielder when the season started. He was. He led the Cardinals in home runs, led the Cardinals in RBIs in spring training. So he
I think that's because they knew Edmund was not going.
He kind of earned it. He was going to be in the outfield somewhere, whether it's center field or left field. So he's gone. Tommy Edman, the starting center fielder last year, most of the time, and going to be the starting center fielder this year probably, he's gone. So, really, O'Neill traded. The Cardinals lost two out of three of their outfielders. If you count O'Neill in that, they lost them all from last year. O'Neill, I don't count O'Neill because he's so much with the Cardinals in and out of the lineup. I don't even count him as a third out. But I count Jordan Walker last year. And so you've got to be able to do little things to make up for that. A guy like Burleson's got to do better. And Burleson has not been kind of hitter that's made a difference. But the Cubs, they've got a lot of people on that roster. It's pretty good. So, I mean, look at your infield up the middle. That's pretty good. Horner, Dansby Swanson. And
Swanson hit a big three-run homer yesterday.
And Morrell, good hitter.
So, the most exciting play in the baseball game yesterday was a play in the seventh inning.
What are we talking about, Cardinal game or yes. Cub game?
2-1, Cardinals had taken the lead after the Jordan Montgomery wild pitch. And then this happened, highlighted by Mason Wynn and his speed.
Got a huge jump. Line into left center field. That's down for a hit. Mason on his way to third. They're going to wave him. Here he comes. Here comes the relay throw. It won't be made. They put him in motion. Gorman puts it in play, and the Cardinals extend the lead.
That's just some good old-fashioned baseball right there. You put Wynn in motion, plaza tire, service, pitch, track, fastball, up, away, drives it in that gap that you mentioned. There's plenty of room. McCarthy chases it, but with that jump of Wynn, he scores easily on this play.
Got a hit. Jesse scored from first on a single.
You know how long it took him to get from first to home? 8.66 seconds. And that's higher than anybody else in the major leagues this year.
According to StatCast, the 8.66 seconds, the fastest first to home by a Cardinals player in the StatCast era, which is 2015. The previous best, Harrison Bader in 2019, went first to home in 9.05, and Mason Wynn went in 8.66.
And just think, the guy they sent down, Victor Scott, was this year already the number one in sprint speed in the big leagues, 30.4 feet a second. So he replaced Bobby Witt, some of those speedsters in the big leagues, as the number one fastest man on a sprint speed. So really, a Mason Wynn going around from first to home in 8.66 seconds was probably the second fastest man on the Cardinal roster 2 weeks ago. Scott probably would have beat that, don't you think? They'd have a possibility.
Yeah.
So Carter's got some exciting young players coming up.
And Walker is included in that
group. He
sure is.
Walker, Scott, Mason Wynn. Mason Wynn, to me, is so much more comfortable at the plate than I figured he would be. And you know why? A big thing is he takes the ball the other way.
He is hitting the ball to right field.
Exactly. He just missed one yesterday. He just hit, wasn't hit hard, but he missed one down the first baseline by 6 inches. That would have been a double. As long as you can go the other way, one thing, it cuts down on strikeouts. But he's got speed to beat out a lot of hits on the infield.
Is this concerning to you, this inability to hit the fastball? Jess, here are the StatCast numbers. Last year, Arenado slugged 510 against the fastball, 510. This year, 354. Paul Goldschmidt, last year against the fastball, 453 slug, 453. This year, 385. Jordan Walker, 473 against the fastball last year, slug. This year, 219. And then Nolan Gorman, who's picked it up, slug 569, number one for the Cardinals against the fastball. 569 this year, 378. This against fastballs.
What does it show you? It shows you that's the reason why they're under 500. The reason why they're losing game after game is all stats. And you can pull up any stat there. You pull up a good one there. But you can pull up any other stat that you want to, and the Cardinals are going to be minus on almost all of them offensively.
When you're getting beat by the fastball, is there any blame in your mind? Who is your hitting coach? Why are you getting beat by fastballs?
I've seen more swings and misses on fastballs this year. Now, granted, the home run that Goldschmidt hit the other night, it said it was 96 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So he can do it.
He and Lars Nootbaar have the two extra base hits against 95-plus this year, just two. Nootbaar, Goldschmidt.
Well, we'll see what – it's still so young. You can't jump off the ledge with, you know, what, 35 games played maybe, something like that. But it's at the point where you get the 1st of May, I think you're going to have to – the Cards are going to have to turn it around.
They've played 25 games. They're 11-14 right now as we sit here.
Yeah. So they're okay right now.
Did you see things aren't going well for the Giants? They're a minus 20 run differential, 12-14. Blake Snell, injured list, abductor strain. Just signed him to the big contract. There's always the question about him. He doesn't give you innings. And now you see why nobody wanted to step up and give him a long-term deal.
The most impressive thing with the Cardinals has been their pitching, of course. But their bullpen, when you take 7, 8, 9 with Romero, Kittredge, and Helsley, right now, that's the strongest.
It's locked down. Are locked down right now.
Strongest point on the Cardinals, no doubt.
You have a sixth inning lead. I mean, right now, don't you have supreme confidence, Romero, Kittredge, and Helsley coming in?
That's a great point, because I thought that yesterday when the Cards tied it. I thought, well, they tied it around the sixth inning. I thought, well, we got a great chance to win this game. And why? Because I knew the three pitchers is going to be coming in. Romero, Kittredge, Helsley. And I thought, well, we don't have to, well, we can wait around here, because with these next three, and I'm glad he pitched Helsley in the ninth inning, even though it was a 5-1 game. Get used to finishing
muscle
off games.
Memory, you're the ninth inning guy.
Yeah. And
right now, Romero's ERA, Jess, 146. Kittredge, 090. And Helsley, 208. That is lockdown.
Well, Kittredge, I'll give Mozeliak credit for he picked him up, and that was a great move. I tell you, he looks like the toughest guy to hit of those three to me. Boy, his sinker slider is off the charts, and he still can pop 95.
He was an all-star, and they gave up Richie Palacios, who the last few games he's been batting third for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. Or they're not the
well,
Devil Rays, the Rays.
Give up something to get something.
Right.
And Cardinals, I think, needed pitching more than they needed Palacios. So, but I like that kid. You know that. I like Palacios. I thought he brought a lot to the Cardinals.
So, did you see, I'm sure, if you watch MLB Network, and I know you do, that you saw umpire Hunter Wendelstedt, two batters into the baseball game the other day at Yankee Stadium. Aaron Boone was chirping from the Yankees dugout. Wendelstedt took off his mask and said, "That's it. I don't want to hear anything else from you." Aaron Boone has been ejected more than any other manager since he took over as a Yankee skipper. He knows when the umpire has come to his limit, even though it was early. Okay, they probably had previous run-ins. And so He didn't say anything. He was sitting there, and they've showed the video a million times. Shown the video. There was a fan behind the Yankee dugout, probably 15 feet behind Aaron Boone, that just started screaming at Wendelstedt. Wendelstedt took off his mask and ejected Boone. And they even brought the sound up. They had to bleep Boone, and he got thrown out of the game. And he was pleading his case. He's like, I did not say a word. Wendelstedt said, I don't care. You're gone. Even though he said nothing, Jess.
Well, it makes you wonder, too, if that fan, knowing how he came over and warned Boone, maybe shouted kind of the same things that Boone was to see what would happen. I don't know.
So you know how these guys, these umpires, they never have to do any post-game pressers. They send a pool reporter into the umpire room and get a couple of quotes.
I wouldn't say anything.
That's about it. Here's what Hunter Wendelstedt, who, by the way, runs a very popular and successful umpiring school down in Florida. Hunter Wendelstedt, and I'm sure you remember his father, Harry Wendelstedt. He was an umpire for decades in the big leagues. Here's the quote from Wendelstedt. Apparently, what he said, there was a fan right above the dugout. This isn't my first ejection. In the entirety of my career, I have never ejected a player or a manager for something a fan has said. I understand that's going to be part of the story or something like that, because that's what Aaron was portraying. I heard something come from the far end of the dugout, had nothing to do with his area, but he's the manager of the Yankees, so he had to go.
He's not the manager of the fans, though.
Jess, he's the manager of the Yankees. His players, or he did not say anything, but still, he's the manager. He has to go. Is that how we're doing it now?
Well,
doesn't Major League Baseball have to step in and say, that is not how we operate, son?
It's hard for an umpire to pick out who's in the dugouts making the chirping. Now, it's not hard to figure out with Boone, because he stands right there by the edge of the steps all the time, closest to the home plate. So it's easy to pick him out, and you know his voice. But, no, you can't isolate the manager as the only one you kick out with a rumbling in a dugout. Otherwise, I'm going to be... The word begins with P. And my guys in the dugout that get me kicked out. You know what I mean? That's not how it works. No.
Wendelstedt went on to say, he said a fan said it. A fan said it, I said. I don't care who said it. It's foolish to throw out a player if you don't know who did it. So he threw out the manager.
You know, we're taught from the time.
Is this how baseball is going to be now?
I hope not. But we're taught, Eric, and you were too, from high school on. You turn off the fans, you know, they're going to be yelling at you and calling you, hey, 24, you suck, and they're going to say everything to you, you know, that they can, and you just got to turn it off. You just got to just ignore it. And as it goes up the ladder, it gets worse, believe it or not, that you have to turn off more. But umpires, don't we need the umpires to actually just worry about the game and ignore? You can ignore people. You don't have to look at them and everything and try to control their emotions. I think the umpires need a little more patience in jumping.
It was the first inning.
Yeah, come on. I mean, you're trying to control the dugout and be umpire also. Let the dugout be what it is. I mean, I've had guys that have chirped a little bit too much in the dugout, and I myself will tell them, hey, calm it down a little bit, you know, because I don't want to have somebody kicked out that I may need. But, and I'm sure that Boone has done that for other guys, told them, hey, cool it a little bit. But now he's going to have to tell them, cool it completely, or I'm going to get kicked out. If they do that, if they kick out the manager every time they hear something over there, well, there's going to be a lot of teams with the coaches doing the managing.
It's unbelievable.
And yeah, it is.
Not the only umpire controversy. We had the end of a game yesterday. Orioles-Angels. Massive controversy. And I'm going to let you hear what the Angels broadcasters had to say about the play that ended the game against Baltimore. That's straight ahead. It's the Sports Huddle. SEMO. ESPN Radio. Sports Huddle, SEMO, ESPN, 1220 AM, 93.5 FM. And you can always find us online at SEMOESPN.com. Eric, and Sean, folks, go ahead.
That little song there by the Traveling Wilburys is the end of the line. And that was played by Eric on purpose for my little sister Neva's birthday today.
Happy birthday, Geneva.
Yes, it's a special day, and she actually celebrated her birthday a little bit on mine because the girls were in town, you know, got the whole family together, but it's her birthday today, so we just wanted to acknowledge that. Little piano player down at Lambert's.
You got to group them all together.
Yeah,
if everybody...
with big families you do, really.
Right?
Yeah.
All right, Jess, yesterday the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim were hosting the Baltimore Orioles. The O's jumped out to a 6-0 lead, and here come the Angels. Mike Trout blasted a 2-run homer. He's got 10 home runs to lead the major leagues. So once again, like I said before the season started, all these people that are saying, well, Trout's, he's not the best player anymore, he's always hurt, well, he's not hurt right now, and I think he's still the best player. Although,
I think I said that too. If he's not hurt, he's still the best. But he's hurt so much, you can't list him as the best most of the years.
And we'll talk about what Ohtani has been doing here in a moment, so you can make the argument that maybe Ohtani... I want to finish this. So they're down 6-0.
Ohtani's been the best the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, yeah, and he's been the best this year. He and Trout. So Trout gets them a 2-run homer, 6-2. Angels claw back. They get it to 6-5 in the ninth. Okay. Joe Adell, two outs in bottom of the ninth. He's the tying run. Tries to steal second. They throw to second. Umpire calls him out. They go and look at the replay. They challenged it. And, Jess, I've seen the replay 10 times probably. There is no way that this umpire back at the review center can say that he was tagged before his foot got to the bag. It was close, but it's definitive. He was in there. Here is how it turned out. Angels television yesterday, everybody awaiting whether or not Joe Adell is going to be called out or safe.
He called him out, the game over.
Is the game over, or will the game continue? Here is Angels TV.
If this call goes the way we think it should, crowd is chanting safe.
After review, the call on the field stands, the runner is out.
That is absurd. That is absurd.
That's unbelievable.
That's a joke. That's a joke. Absolutely ridiculous. It is clear on the replay that Adell was safe, and it is a ridiculous way to end this game. That's garbage.
That is garbage. That's Wayne Randazzo and Mark Gubiza. They're the television voices of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Adell, after the game, the guy they called out, foot was in there, tagged him up on the leg. His foot got there first. We're all looking at the picture. We're watching the video. Where my foot hit and where I got tagged were two totally different spots. But the umpiring review replay at baseball's headquarters in Manhattan. In this case, the umpire's name is Carlos Torres. He disagreed. He ruled the call stands, which means there was not enough evidence to overturn it. Game over. I don't know that they would have won, but as a broadcaster, when you're sitting there watching the replay 10 times and they're showing it to the fans, the 39 fans that are there to watch the Angels now that Ohtani's gone, And everybody can see, boy, that foot, that toe got in there, that toe got.
You remember how things used to be. If the throw beat you, you're out.
No question.
No matter what. And now it's with a swim move and stuff like that where you bring that arm back. It's really, a lot of times the throw does beat the runner, but the runner still gets in there because of a really beautiful slide. I don't know about yesterday's call on that. But it sounds like that was a throw probably beat him. And I've said that a lot of times at home plate where a guy slides, let's say if goes in feet first, and you tag him on the shoulders, by the time you tag him on the shoulders, you got to extend that down to his body. Where was his feet? You know? But throw beat him, but the foot was there. You see that a lot back in the day, and I've always said replay. I don't know of any manager that would object because replay, all we care about is getting it right. I don't want any favors or anything like that. Just get it right. And it seems like that call you're talking about, they didn't. For one thing, a team sticking its neck out to try to steal a base, it's not bad baseball because the odds of scoring from second base are probably 50% more than scoring from first base. And I'm, you know, with two men out, I've done it before, no question. Every manager has. You got a speedy guy on there, get him down to second, and, you know, anything can get him in. So I'm not questioning the idea of stealing. You're really taking a chance when you do it. And they took a chance, and really, on this instance, got beat by it.
Jess, today, April 25th, and the oldest living former Major League Baseball player turns 100 years old today. Art Shallock, a left-handed pitcher who pitched in 58 games with the Yankees and Orioles over a five-year career in the 1950s, is celebrating his 100th birthday with family and friends at a senior living facility in Sonoma, California. And Shallock said those were some great times with the Yankees, which included three World Series championships. Hard to believe I'm hitting 100, but I look back on my life, I'm grateful for the experiences that I had. He was born April 25th, 1924 in Mill Valley, California. The oldest living ball player who played in the major leagues, Art Shallock.
I've heard the name. That's amazing. It's amazing to live that long. For one thing, probably what, less than 1% of the people in the world live to be that old. You should be grateful for a lot of things, mainly grateful to God that he allowed you to live that kind of life and that long. And still, evidently, he's still in his right mind and still active, at least verbally. That's amazing.
But how about that? Just think today, the oldest living ball player, Art Shallock, 100 years old today. We talked about the start that Mike Trout is off to. Jess, with all of the off-the-field distractions with his interpreter, you could understand if Shohei Ohtani was a little distracted with, you know, he gets the big contract, then he's got all of these off-the-field things with the interpreter, and I think there are a lot of guys whose production may fall off a little bit in a situation like that. Not Shohei Ohtani, Jess. How about this from Ohtani?
Ohtani with an absolute rocket. Forget about it. First game in Nats Park. First home run in Nats Park. 4-1 Dodgers. 4-23 on Sunday. 4-50 tonight.
A home run from Ohtani, 450 feet. It went 118.6 miles an hour off of the bat. That was two nights ago. Yesterday, three doubles. Jess, he leads Major League Baseball with a 371 batting average, and he leads Major League Baseball with an OPS. Ready? 1129. Shohei Ohtani.
Well, this year, all he's got to do is concentrate on hitting.
Yeah.
And that's going to show you how wild he can be. It's amazing the talent of him. And, you know, no matter what it costs you to get him, and Dodgers got a really good contract with all that deferred payment.
So
he's going to be worth it.
He's got he leads the league in hits, major leagues. Mookie Betts second. The RBI leader in the major leagues. Three more last night. Marcell Ozuna, 29 RBIs. He's second to Trout and homers. Ozuna's got 9 homers. Trout now with 10. Just an update on a former Cardinal having success. All right, Jess.
Well, maybe go out and beat up another woman this year, and it'll knock his stats down a little.
Hello to the lovely and talented Dawn Sean. She's got the day off. It's her final day off of the week as she does the weekend shifts. So she has a wonderful day today. She was up early this morning texting me and tuning in to the Sports Huddle today. And, of course, we definitely have to say happy birthday to Neva this morning. Hope she has a wonderful day, too.
Yeah, very well put. I want to say hi to my girls in Texas and Columbia and boys, Jess and Tom, right around here that are very aware of Neva's birthday today. And I leave you with this one today. I think it rings true for a lot of us. It is better to have a great thing and lose it than to have never had it. It is better to have a great thing and lose it than to have never had it. I think we've all had some great things and lost it, but still, the great thing you had was worth it. That was written by Charles Dickens, not I.
I share a birthday with Charles Dickens. All right, Jess, this just in. SEMO softball's three-game series at home this weekend against Western Illinois. There's dicey weather this weekend. Andy Sawyers is going to be keeping a close. He is keeping a close eye on it. So we've got a chance for a lot of dicey weather this weekend. So they'll navigate. They've got turf. Softball does not. What they have done, they are moving that series, which was Saturday and Sunday. They're moving it to Friday and Saturday now. So Friday and Saturday, it'll be a doubleheader tomorrow. So they'll try to get the two in and then try to navigate Saturday. 12 noon doubleheader tomorrow, 12 noon game Saturday, and that is the latest. And, you know, we'll keep you updated on if the start times change or the baseball is supposed to play at 6 o'clock tomorrow night against the reigning champions of the OVC,
the Morehead State Eagles. Shuffle around a little bit on that schedule. You know, they do that a lot, trying to get away from the rain.
I would guess it would be maybe slightly altered. You've got turf, and you'll be looking for a window, so kind of stay tuned. But as of now, they have not made any decisions.
Yeah, it's
kind of
what the prediction is. If it's predicted to set in for 2 or 3 hours, then you alter the game time.
And
if it's just a hit-and-miss deal with scattered showers, you can try to play right through it.
They've got a service. They've got a service, the university does, where they are in contact with meteorologists. They pay for the service, and Andy Sawyers actually can talk to a meteorologist. He has talked to people at KFES over the years, and they are in strict communications, constant communications, because they want to know when is the best time. Do we need to move these times? What do you think? Where's our window? Are we going to have a window? So you've got 3 days to get in three games. Starting tomorrow night. So if I had to guess, I mean, if it's supposed to start raining tomorrow night, maybe they move the game to tomorrow afternoon. I know they'd hate to do that because it's a fill the hill Friday, free adult beverages.
And you
beverages.
Can always play a doubleheader if you have to.
Yeah.
But I don't think they will. Not with turf.
And it's the Donate Life game tomorrow night with Oregon Mid-America Transplant. So We'll keep everybody updated.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
I am too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So softball, noon doubleheader tomorrow, noon single game on Saturday. All right, Jess. I'm going to run it back for a Friday edition tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right.
Doubleheader, the show and the game tomorrow night.
It'll be impossible for you to get. You might get a little NBA playoffs, but it's all NFL draft. Greeny coming up.